Hi, this is Andrew Goodall and Charlie Goodchild, and you're listening to the Health Space Podcast. This is the podcast where we dive deep into health-related questions and topical issues relevant to us all. The world of health and medicine is messy, full of contrasting opinions and misleading advice. We will challenge myths and common misconceptions by exploring the evidence and speaking to leading experts along the way. We are physiotherapists and have been friends since university and share the same belief that everyone deserves the opportunity to access high quality, up-to-date health information. When it comes to health, we believe that better never ends. Thanks for listening, and let's dive straight in. Okay, so here we are for another episode of the Health Space Podcast. Today we've got an old colleague of mine who I'm really excited to get on. Darren is a physiotherapist who specialises in HIV, infectious diseases, oncology and palliative care. He works in the NHS mainly, and he's at Chelsea and Westminster, which is where I met him. We worked together for a couple of years. I was just a lowly band five. Darren was a big wig band seven, you know, swanning around, sorry, in the on the wards.
Swanning around? You make that sound terrible. No,
I'm joking. The reason we got Darren on is for lots of reasons, but he has suffering with long COVID. We wanted to do a podcast on long COVID with his experience with sort of infectious disease, oncology, and that experience of that background alongside his current situation suffering with long COVID. And we thought he'd be an absolutely brilliant guest to get on. Darren's also recently started a podcast. He's also got a blog and a website on long COVID and an Instagram and just basically everything on long COVID. So I thought, let's get him on and let's have a chat.
Yeah, there's not much more topical at the moment than a subject about COVID, really, is there? So we couldn't really keep going without, especially with a health podcast, without mentioning COVID and especially long COVID. So Andy has spoken a lot about you, so we're really looking forward to hearing what you've got to say today.
Thank you very much for having me, both of you.
Yeah, absolutely. More than welcome. And I guess it's time to hand over to you and hear what you have to say about yourself first. So is there anything else to add? Andy's already given you a big introduction, but anything else to add about what brings you to here?
Absolutely. Thanks for the big up. Absolutely. It's actually nice to see you again, because it's been many, many years, hasn't it? So formal introduction, I always do it in this way. So my name's Darren Brown. I'm a cisgendered gay white man, live in London in the UK, and I'm of mixed English and Irish heritage, and my preferred pronouns are he and him. I am a clinical academic physio, so my area of practice is particularly within the context of HIV disability and rehabilitation. And as mentioned, I'm living with long COVID. And so I've been living with this now for longer than a year. And it's been a bit of a journey. And I think the easiest way I can describe it is that of something that's very episodic and unpredictable. But yeah, so I don't quite know what you want me to talk about or how you want to go about this, but I'm happy to kind of like go with any questions if that's good.
Yeah, that's perfect. So the first thing I had, and I guess this is because I did some research before, is like, what is long COVID, and do we have a definition for that basically yet?
So I might answer this in two different ways if that's okay. So long COVID to me is an important term. So as a term, it's a community-driven name. So it was a term that was created by a woman in Italy who was living with the long-term consequences of coronavirus. And the purpose of creating the term was because at the time, a lot of the conversations about coronavirus was that it was an acute disease and you either died or you got better in 2 weeks. And there was kind of no real middle ground. And actually, she came up with the term to say, actually, that's not the story. There's people still living with the longer term consequences of this. And most of this was being done on social media and online. And so what was coming out was different terms of kind of like long haul COVID or long haulers. And actually, long COVID was a term that was created by communities of people living with the long term consequences of coronavirus, and has actually been a very useful term, because you rightly said, actually, we don't have a consensus definition on what long COVID is. What we know is that when people have contracted SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes coronavirus or COVID-19, you can have ongoing long-term consequences. And so the term long COVID is actually quite appropriate because we don't really understand the mechanisms of long COVID yet. We don't know what causes it. But what we do know is that people have persistent symptoms and it's ongoing. And so in the absence of understanding and the absence of certainty, long COVID is basically a really appropriate term to define that people still have ongoing problems. And it leaves it open to the diversity and presentation that people have. There's lots of discussions about different phenotypes and or subgroups of people that may be living with this. So at the moment, the only thing that we really know is that when people have had coronavirus and they have long-term consequences, they fall under this umbrella term of long COVID. Now, that does actually capture a wide diversity of people. So that can include people that have been incredibly unwell, admitted to hospital in acute hospital settings, all the way through to intensive care and survived those episodes, but can also capture people that have never touched a hospital or medical setting and actually acquired coronavirus and were managed in the community and maybe didn't even have any access to healthcare at that time. So long COVID is an umbrella term. It captures a wide diversity of people. But what it does is it identifies people that have long-term consequences after coronavirus. There's been lots of attempts to try and kind of characterize what people living with long COVID may look like. And I think what we can ultimately grasp from the existing literature, which overwhelmingly has been led by people living with long COVID, is that it's a multidimensional illness or disease. Characterized by impairments of lots of different systems of the body. It presents with clusters of different types of symptoms. So well over 100 different types of symptoms that people can experience. But overwhelmingly, it's fluctuating or it's episodic in its nature. And it's often unpredictable with that.
It's quite a sticky term, isn't it? If you think of long COVID, it almost explains it without really having anyone explain it to you. I think it's quite a sticky term, which I guess explains its success in the community and in the wider domain of society, I guess.
I like that sticky term.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's ever explained it or I've even ever looked it up, but I've certainly never had too much of a problem grasping what it really means and what the consequences are and what it leads to. So it's nice to get that overview, but really, yeah, it's correct, isn't it? It probably does what it says on the tin in some ways.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because there are other terms that are being used. So there's other community terms like long haulers. That's particularly a North American thing. But we are seeing overwhelmingly that large organizations are coming out with different terms. So in a UK context, for example, we're talking about post-COVID syndrome. In the States, the NIH have used post-acute sequelae of COVID, so PASC. And then the World Health Organization have called it post-COVID conditions. I think what's really interesting is that communities of people living with long COVID overwhelmingly seem to dislike those terms. They're rather medicalized. They don't also necessarily represent things. And I think one of the things that people dislike is the use of the word post. When you're living with a disability, nothing feels very post about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't have any judgment in the terminology. It just, like you said, it kind of is what it is. There's no, like you say, post, there's no kind of condition or syndrome or any of that stuff. It's just is what it is, which is quite nice. And I can see why communities have got on board with that. I was going to ask about range of symptoms, but you sort of covered the fact that it's really broad. Are there any more common symptoms in the breadth of symptoms, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So like, to maybe make it a little clearer as well about the types of people that are living with long COVID. So what we know is that overwhelmingly, the vast majority of people that contract coronavirus do not end up in hospital. So something I think in the UK particularly, it's about 80% of people are managed in a community setting. So only 20% of people have ended up in hospital with acute coronavirus, and only 10% of those have ended up in intensive care. So the current estimates are that 1 in 4 of people, or a quarter of people, will have ongoing symptoms after 5 weeks of acute coronavirus. And potentially 1 in 10, or maybe even more, from latest evidence from the Office for National Statistics, or ONS, is demonstrating that one in 10 people have symptoms after 12 weeks. So when talking about these symptoms, the most prevalent symptom that's being reported in all of the literature is fatigue. Now, it's a difficult term for people to possibly understand. And I think there's a bit of a shift to try and move away from the word fatigue. It's certainly not what a lot, because fatigue is a term is often used interchangeably with I feel tired. And I think most people kind of understand that, you know, I've had a busy day at work, I feel a bit shattered, I feel knackered, I'm tired. It's not the same. It's overwhelming exhaustion where you have zero energy to fully function. And it's like someone has pulled the plug on you. And that is the symptom that is being reported in the majority of studies. However, other symptoms that are being commonly reported is a symptom called brain fog, which basically is not unique to this. Other health conditions, just like other conditions, have described fatigue as well. But brain fog is it's a cognitive dysfunction. So it might be problems with memory, might be problems with word recall, and also cognitive processing and executive function. And then other symptoms that are being experienced are breathlessness or shortness of breath. And sometimes that can also include hyperventilation or breathing pattern disorders. Chest pain or tightness. It's a common one where people feel that they're getting incredibly tight pressure in their chest. And then also another symptom that is not necessarily being reported that widely in all of the literature, but in some of the literature, it's a high prevalence, is something called post-exertional malaise or post-exertional symptom exacerbation, which is something that's most commonly known in the context of chronic fatigue syndrome or myalgic encephalomyelitis, with CFS or ME. And it's a symptom, which is that your symptoms are made worse by exertion, and that can be both physical, cognitive, or social exertion. So those are the kind of common things. But what we do know is that overwhelmingly, people are presenting with clusters of symptoms, demonstrating its multidimensional nature in terms of the different systems of the body that can be affected.
Darren, would you be comfortable to tell our listeners a bit about your experience and your symptom presentation, and perhaps just for a bit of recent news about your experience yesterday as well, because you mentioned something that happened yesterday that may have contributed to some symptoms.
Yeah, very happy to. So my story is longer than a year long, so I won't drag it out. So I contracted coronavirus in March 2020. I had all the typical acute symptoms that I think most people are pretty familiar with now. I returned back to work after 10 days of isolation and actually worked full time for 6 months. During that period, I was redeployed, which included like intensive care, and it was the first wave. You know, we were sleeping in hospital, in hotels and stuff, and you know, it was busy. But I had some ongoing symptoms. So fatigue was one of them. Some breathlessness was another, and also some discoordination. I kept tripping up the stairs. And what I didn't know at the time was whether I was having some kind of hangover of having had the virus, or whether I was just extremely exhausted because I was responding to the pandemic and working really, really hard. So what I was trying to do to manage my fatigue was actually to exercise like a good physio would. I was trying to manage my fatigue in the way that I had been taught and educated best. And I was grading that up. I started off with yoga, building it up. And one weekend I just did more. I just went out for a long cycle with my boyfriend. I went for a walk. It didn't feel like much at the time, but it resulted in a crash. A crash where I ended up bedbound for a week. I ended up being signed off work for 2 months. I was then on a phased return to work. And in total, it took me between 6 to 7 months to recover from that crash. Whereas I mentioned at my worst, bedbound, flatbound, because I live in a second floor flat with no lift access, I couldn't use the stairs. And the symptoms that I had at that time was that overwhelming exhaustion, was the brain fog. I have a strange tachycardia that I'm still under investigation for. So I did not know what was going on with my heart and the response in my cardiovascular or neurocardiovascular system. I still have that tachycardia. So I believe I could have some form of what's called a dysautonomia, where my autonomic nervous system has been disrupted. And so those were the symptoms, and then also the post-exertional symptom exacerbation, where I was, every time I would exert myself, it would get worse.
Aaron, the crash that you mentioned, are you hearing that from others, where there's a kind of period where they're trying to get back to normal, and then there's almost like another episode, not another episode of COVID, but another episode where obviously this crash happens?
Yeah, people are using different terms. And I think, I don't know that my story is necessarily that uncommon. I think there's a lot of people that have had different experiences. Some people got acute coronavirus, were significantly unwell and never really recovered. And some of them are still living with not really recovering a year later. And some other people have been like myself, where I felt like I'd recovered and I didn't even know what long COVID was. And then I crashed. And then I discovered that I, not only what long COVID was, but that I had it. And then there are other people that have kind of been really up and down and episodic all throughout this trajectory. But crash is definitely a term that some people are using. Other people are using relapse. And some people use like flares. But, you know, like crash or relapse are quite strong terms. And I think it really kind of demonstrates the severity of symptoms that people are experiencing and the profound reduction in their level of functioning. And consequently, the disability that they're experiencing at that time. But yeah, there have been my symptoms that I've been experiencing. And you mentioned about something I did yesterday. So I've been feeling a lot better recently because I've responded really well to the vaccine, which is actually a strange phenomenon that people have been recognizing. So there's no data on this, but there's guesstimates that somewhere between kind of like 20 to 30%, maybe a third of people are responding well to the vaccine in terms of their long COVID symptoms. So they're alleviating it. And my first vaccine helped increase the threshold by which I could exert myself. By the time I got to have my second jab, I felt like I needed it, like my threshold level was coming down. I had my second jab and wow, through the roof, my exertional levels got better. I've been doing like long walks at the weekend. I've been able to use the stairs at work again. Been feeling really good. And actually yesterday I finally got round to having my appointment at the long COVID clinic. And actually prior to this appointment, I'd been thinking about returning back to some exercise because I was feeling so good. And I was, as part of the long COVID clinic assessment, they do an exercise test on you, which is a 1 minute sit to stand test. And they reported that I was the best they've seen. And I did really, really well. And today I'm having a bit of a crash. I've got quite profound exhaustion. I'm sure you're probably thinking that I'm communicating well, but this is taking an awful lot of effort to communicate at the moment. And my brain really hurts and my body aches all over.
So you absolutely went for it then. So it was a test and you just went, you know what, I'm gonna smash this. Or was it just that,
you know what? I didn't. I actually tried to hold back. Like I thought to myself, because this is what's really weird. Like I felt like I've been almost symptom free for about a month. And I've been saying, is this because the vaccine's done amazing things to me? Or have I just got a really good handle on how to pace my activities now? And even though I've slightly increased my exertion, I wasn't being set back. And I was thinking, great, I'm getting to this kind of like fine line of, could I push myself a bit further? Could I do a bit more? And so yesterday I thought, I'm not gonna go for this. I'm gonna do like a sensible. And I just did sit the stands. I did 20 in a minute. Like it wasn't like I was pelting it. And I'm quite surprised by my response today, actually. I wasn't expecting this.
Are you aware of this variety of symptoms or clusters like this for any other virus, any other condition? Is there anything that's similar to this? Because to me, this seems so unusual, so new, so novel. Is it as novel as it seems to me, or is it just my ignorance?
I think there are other conditions that are similar. And I think the most similar are those that present with like post-viral illnesses or conditions. And we know that ME/CFS is commonly triggered by infections. And actually a lot of these symptoms massively overlap with ME/CFS. I think as we don't understand what causes long COVID, we don't understand the mechanisms of it yet. It's too early to say whether it is or is not ME/CFS. I think what we know is that it's very clear that coronavirus is the cause of this. What it's doing to the body to cause long COVID is the unknown. And there may be different viruses that therefore cause different issues. So we know, obviously, you know, SARS-CoV-2 is a respiratory virus. That's how it's transmitted. And so it's unsurprising people are ending up with respiratory symptoms. But we know that ME/CFS is a clustering of symptoms characterized by particularly this post-exertional malaise or symptom exacerbation, which is a cardinal feature of that. So, yeah, so I think what's interesting is that ME/CFS has been a condition that has been overwhelmingly under-researched, under-resourced and poorly managed for a long time. And I think part of that is the invisible nature of the disability that people experience.
It's a classic sign or a classic thing in medicine, isn't it? Those that don't have these really obvious conditions that seem to be living with these almost invisible conditions sometimes certainly feel like they're not forgotten, but certainly less, people are less aware of them, and as such the general notion within community and also in the NHS is that they feel almost less important or less funded for certain. What's out there with regards to treatment, for want of a better term?
Well, that's a difficult one. I think, you know, like when we think of treatments, I think the general public generally thinks of medicines and cures. Maybe within our world of physiotherapy and rehabilitation, we think about the symptoms and how we can manage those symptoms. So I think depending on people's context, depends on what they may expect from treatments. In terms of medicines and cures, there ain't one. In terms of where we are, in terms of how people are managing their symptoms, it's debated. And there's actually no real evidence as such yet on what are the most effective ways of doing that. We know that rehabilitation is certainly being advocated as one of the most important ways at the moment, because obviously of the profound disability that people are experiencing. But there are certainly debates about how that's done as well. And I know that within our world of physiotherapy, there's lots of debates about that, particularly in the realm of physical activity and exercise. And it's become a difficult topic to discuss because many people have very strong opinions around different things.
And once people have gone beyond that 10-week mark where there seems to be some statistics about the prevalence, what are the chances that people will, is there any knowledge, even maybe in looking at the chronic fatigue syndrome or the ME, are there chances where people will make a recovery at that point?
I think this is the big unknown for me. I don't know enough about ME/CFS literature. I could be wrong if I say this. And so if anyone's listening and knows this better, please don't shoot me down if I get this wrong. But my understanding is that if people have presented with this post-viral type illness, they often, if they're going to recover, it could be a very long process and anywhere between a year or two. And I think if you haven't recovered by that time, there's a chance that there could be long-term consequences. In terms of long COVID specifically, it's still so new, and we actually don't know the long-term trajectory of this yet, and we haven't even got the longitudinal data on this yet. It's emerging. You know, the emerging data is what people look like over a 12-month period. But certainly, I don't believe that the data is out there yet on what is the trajectory of a large cohort of people, how many of them recover, how many do not, what are the characteristics or risk factors or confounding associations with who does or does not recover. And I think the only thing we do know is that in the acute episode, there is some emerging data that people that try to push through their recovery early on are more likely to experience disability later on. So actually acute episode rest is actually proving to be a potential aspect of reducing disability later on. But there's no intervention studies on that. It's not been in an RCT. It was an observational study. So it needs to be taken with caution, that advice.
Yeah, but it does correlate quite nicely with the advice given for concussion, which is very specifically rest, you know, especially in children. So it's interesting that perhaps anything where there are those cognitive symptoms, that rest really is what what our best option is right now. That doesn't surprise me, actually. That seems pretty sensible.
It's interesting you bring that up, because actually I've been hearing this more often, a comparison to approaches to concussion. That is way outside my knowledge and skills. So maybe you could share with me, you know, what's that approach? Like, well, yeah. Is it just rest, or is there more to that?
So there's a 2-week rest period. And once you are symptom free, you would typically start a return phase to play, a phase return to play over 5 stages, which starts with a static bike, progresses to a run, progresses to a skills based session, progresses to a contact session. And then at that point, if they have successfully met their criteria, symptom free at each stage, then they would make a return to play. And again, that's another part of it. So a fail at any one of those points, they go back to the previous mm-hmm. stage. And interestingly enough, there is a post-concussion syndrome. So there are people who suffer long-term consequences. I'm treating someone now actually in clinic who has had long-term symptoms following a ski accident. And her symptoms are very similar to some of the symptoms you described to me, particularly the cognitive symptoms, the difficulty concentrating at school. So without any particular knowledge in the link, there does seem to be some similarity between the two in many ways, I guess. I'm sure plenty of research will come through.
Certainly within the context of long COVID, there's more and more emerging data on the multidimensional nature of it affecting different systems, but certainly neurological issues. I think what's really fascinating for me about this is that there is lots of learning to be done in different and additional directions. And so, you know, the learning that we can take from communities such as those living with ME/CFS has been valuable in terms of strategies like stop, rest and pace, looking at different pacing approaches. So, you know, there's talk about quota contingent versus symptom contingent pacing, staying within your energy envelope, heart rate monitoring as well. But, you know, like, I work in HIV and cancer rehab, and you know, one of the things that's been really beneficial for me is recognizing episodic disability, and actually looking at how acceptance and optimism was a potential hallmark of improving trajectory. Acceptance that enabled me to use a walking stick at one point, that enabled me to then pace better. But also look at this, you know, concussion, is there lessons that we can learn from one direction to another as well? And so I think what I really appreciate about this time with this pandemic is that it's affecting everybody everywhere. And so there's so many opportunities now to kind of collectively come together and share knowledge and skills to see what can and can't work. And so that's a fascinating approach.
The optimism really jumps out at me when you talk. And that's something that I'm sure the listeners will hear as well, is given the struggles you've had and the challenges you've had over the past year and a bit, that there seems to be optimism that's shining through. Is that something you've really had to work at? Would you say that's your overarching experience? Are there other things that have gone on? Are there things that have been really tough over that time? Or is it been sort of rooted in optimism throughout?
Sorry, that's made me feel a bit emotional. Thank you. You can tell I'm having a day of it. It's been a real hard year. Mm. And I won't lie, there's been moments where I've worried about the future and been really uncertain about that. And yeah, you know, you've got, you want to be optimistic. Like, really, you just want to be better. You just want to get your life back. But yeah.
Yeah, I think... I'll let Darren pause for a minute. You're fine. I've known Darren for a long time, and this is in him. This like fight, this natural optimism, this kind of, you know, this effervescent for life, this wants to like crack on and do stuff, and just this personality. So I'm not surprised, even in struggles, he's shining. If that makes sense. So when I hear it, I'm not surprised. Okay, I was going to ask, with your experience with like the Kobler Rehab group that you set up, which, as we mentioned before, was for rehabilitating those from HIV, And correct me if I'm cancer in there as well, or is that one specific? I can't remember if that one's specifically for HIV, the COBLA rehab class.
Oh, so my work specifically in the context of HIV is, so the COBLA rehab class is a group rehabilitation intervention for people living with HIV. Yeah,
that's right. Have you found the bits that you put in play there helpful for you with this? Because I know there was lots about pacing and exercise and what, because it sounded like perhaps that hindered you at the start when you tried to kind of go down that modified route with a little bit of pacing and exercise. Yeah, basically, did it help or did it hinder is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, do you know what? That's a really interesting point. Like, because I think it comes back to, has it helped being a physio? And I think overwhelmingly, it's a mixed answer, because there's been moments where being a physio has been great. So being able to advocate for my health needs, record data. So for example, being able to have a conversation with my GP and say, it's not normal that I have a tachycardia of 180 when I walk across my bedroom. What are you going to do about that? Are you going to refer me to cardiology? So, you know, like, that's been really, really useful, because I've been able to advocate for my health needs. However, there's been times where my understanding of rehabilitation and not understanding delayed onset symptoms, that hasn't helped me. And that's actually been a complete rewiring of my understanding of rehabilitation. Because I can see we've got someone in the background there.
Hello. My wife pops in through the back with a glass of wine in her hand. She just pops in with a glass of wine. Yeah, I mean, that's quite impressive, isn't it? Very good.
It's been a rewiring for me, because I was one of the founding members of a group called Long COVID Physio. So this is a collective of physiotherapists globally living with long COVID. And I think what's been really fascinating is, overwhelmingly, all of us have felt this battle between our sense of rehabilitation is obviously about trying to get back to your previous level of function, or your optimal function, or your desired functioning and ability to perform those meaningful activities in day-to-day life. And so we've all got in the back of our minds that we're going to grade ourselves up and get ourselves back there. And actually, that's been our biggest battle, between that and needing to ultimately pace and hold ourselves back. Now, this comes into the big debate about physical activity and exercise. We do not have evidence yet as to whether physical activity and exercise is safe and effective for people living with long COVID. It will work for some people and it won't work for others. And I think that's a really important thing to state here. But what I've personally challenged with is holding back. And so that's where, me as a physio, I found that a real struggle. I've just wanted to keep getting through. And actually, when you're used to being a high functioning person, adopting a much lower level of functioning is actually not an easy thing to do. So when people talk about avoiding boom and busts, it feels quite insulting, because it's like, I didn't really boom. All I did was walk to the shops.
Now, my example was very different to yours. But I did have a situation in my life where there was a year of it where I had to significantly limit everything that I did. I had a back injury, that a radiculopathy, pretty symptomatic. And I can empathize with that feeling of not being yourself and not knowing, basically having to stop everything that you do because you just can't really push through. And you think, like a physio, you keep thinking, if I just keep rehabbing this, if I just keep gradually building, I'll try and do little bits in here, you know, it'll get better. And it just didn't, and it just didn't, and it just didn't. So that really resonated with me as you were speaking there. And unfortunately, there isn't a surgical resolution for long COVID, as far as we know, but, and there thankfully was for my experience, but there was something about that made me go back to that time 7 years ago, where I was week after week, month after month, the same or worse. It just never got better. And I stopped rugby. I stopped all the things I enjoyed. I stopped going to the gym. I'd lost, there was a bit of me that I'd lost. So there must be moments like that for you as well. So that there was just that moment where I just thought, oh yeah, I had a little flash of that in my life, didn't I? And that was pretty rough.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of where being a healthcare professional and having experience of illness and disability kind of transforms your approach, but also where being a healthcare professional and listening to people's experiences can make the biggest difference, isn't it? And I know that certainly, you know, at the moment there are millions of people around the world living with health conditions and suffering those costs and consequences, but unfortunately due to this pandemic that number has exponentially rose.
Your point about the boom bust, I think I'll definitely take that as a learning point, because that's a classic terminology we use, right? You say, oh, you know, you're going through this sort of boom bust cycle, but actually exactly like you said, it's almost offensive in this situation, because it's like, well, you know, I would see, or you might say, my boom is going for a 10K run. It's not walking to the bathroom. So that's a real learning point for me here about how you have these discussions, because these things are important.
Yeah. You know, like, language matters. And I think sometimes we don't know that language can be a problem until we're told. So hopefully when it's mentioned, you know, it's a great opportunity for learning. Like, I'm learning so much about language through all of this. Like, I never realized how certain terms or certain aspects of healthcare were triggering to other communities. And I'm learning loads and I'm really grateful for it.
But we have to, I love this. I can't even remember where I picked it up from, but I did post it on my Instagram. We have to be careful with our words, don't we? Because, you know, words can be like toothpaste. You know, once they're out, you can't put them back in again. And it's so true about some of the things we say. I'm so much more careful with the words I use in a clinical encounter now because of the way they can be misinterpreted and in some ways people can be offended by. So it's so true.
Aaron, you've shared a lot with us today. I think it's important that you tell us about the podcast that you're involved in and tell us about Long COVID Physio so people can get a sense of what's going on and where they can find a bit more information and listen to more stories like yours.
Yeah, so Long COVID Physio started as basically a couple of physios online that were going, oh, we're not alone with this. Maybe we should form a group. And it actually, ironically, started as a group Twitter chat. It was a group of us that were based in the UK and the US, all living with long COVID. And within the space of days, we exceeded the maximum that you could have in a group Twitter chat. And we thought, well, we better set up a Facebook group. So we set up a Facebook group. And actually, we then decided that we were a peer support group. So we were offering peer support to other physiotherapists that were living with long COVID. And very quickly, that grew. And not only grew in number, but also grew in potential role, because we then, you know, publicised that we were a support group. And off the back of that, people were asking us for information, because we were in this unique dual position of being healthcare professionals and physiotherapists living with long COVID. And people were kind of wanting information, and we didn't necessarily have it, nor did we have the capacity. But as time went on, we not only developed from a peer support group, but also into an advocacy and education group. So as time's gone on, we've tried to share our experiences, and particularly our lived experiences of this, as a methodology of translating knowledge and disseminating information. And one of the ways that we've done that is through a podcast. So it's the Long COVID Physio podcast. And the idea is that it's an opportunity for people living with long COVID and our allies to join in the conversation to talk about long COVID. So we've had physios, we've had other allied health professionals talking about their experiences of living with long COVID. And also we've had other people that work in the field or related fields, or sometimes even not related fields, to talk about relevant topics about practice, research and policy. But also we've done other topics. So we've done our website, where we provide a range of different resources. So we've tried to work and collaborate with different people around the world to provide these resources that signpost people to hopefully reliable resources to enable people to get maybe some information that can support them, because a lot of the information out there is still specifically directed at people that are recovering from acute coronavirus rather than living with long COVID. So that's where we are. And in terms of the education that we've done now, we've got our fingers in many pies. So we've worked very closely with Physiopedia, and we worked with them on delivering their long COVID Physiopedia page. We've also worked with the Physio Plus, which is the group for part of Physiopedia in terms of their courses. So we did a long COVID course. We've also collaborated on research. We're also now involved in standards and guidelines. So we've collaborated with the Charter Society of Physiotherapy on both their hospitalised and community standards. Also, we've been involved at different levels. So, for example, I'm involved at the World Health Organization, and also we're working with World Physiotherapy on a range of different outputs that are due to be released soon, hopefully. So watch this space around those. But we only formed in November, so we've kind of evolved quite quickly. But I wonder if that's more a reflection of need and opportunity to contribute to those spaces. And I think it also demonstrates the powerful role that physiotherapy can play in this space, particularly within long COVID. And so that's why it's great that so many physiotherapists are interested in this and so interested in learning and joining in the discussion.
World Health Organization, no less. I mean, just drop that in.
Darren just dropped that one in. He's like, yeah, just the World Health Organization. Yeah, amazing. Okay, Darren, that's incredible, and I think everything you're doing is amazing, really. I like the fact that you engage in lots of different ways. Like, you're on Twitter, then you've got your website, then you've got a blog, then you've got a podcast. It just means that people can find so much information everywhere. We normally move on to the final part where we talk about what other stuff are people listening to, where else what do you like, basically? What other podcasts are you listening to? You know, what other resources are you into? What's got you?
Oh my God, is this like non-work stuff? Can I talk about
non-work? Can be non-work.
Please do.
Line of duty if you want, mate.
Oh my God, I'm so into Line of Duty. Do you know what? I recently liked a Facebook group because they had some knitted dolls of Line of Duty, and I was like, they're spot on. They've even got the waistcoat and beard. Like, I'm into that. So... But podcasts, do you know what? I don't listen to lots of podcasts. One of the, there's a student physiotherapist called Nico who recently recommended a podcast to me by Sophie Hagen that I've now forgotten the name of, and I need to look it up. I think it's called... Oh my God, I can't find it. What's it called? Can't remember.
I'm going to find it for you, mate.
Hagen, that's her name. But basically, she gets all these celebrities on and they talk about different things. And I just like it. And they talk about politics, they talk about comedy, they talk about drama, they talk about race issues, they talk about gender issues, they talk about body image issues. I just quite enjoy it.
So. A good variety of topics.
Made of Human?
Yeah, that's it. That's the
Made
one.
Made of Human. We got them. There you go.
Yeah, I like that. I'm into that.
Fair enough.
I'm a little bit addicted to houseplants. So you can't actually see what's behind my computer. I just have a blank wall behind me. But on the other side, I've literally got a little jungle happening. So.
The Day of the Triffids behind you.
Are they all named? Do they all have names as well?
I haven't named my plants. No,
you have to name them.
For anyone that knows my wife will know that everything in our
getting
house is
better
named.
At keeping them alive now. So
is that why you haven't named them, so you don't have to then say goodbye
to them? Yeah. No. What about you? What are you listening to? You two?
I'm either a Peter Crouch podcast, like just make me laugh whilst I'm running and don't, you know, try not to fall over type thing, or high performance podcast with Jake Humphrey and he's called Liquid. It's basically about like leadership and learning from those that are in sporting or artistic areas where they've just achieved, basically, and trying to just learn about that.
Mine's a bit geeky. Mine's Revisionist History, Malcolm Gladwell, British History Podcast, which is like goes through everyone switches off at this point, but mine's a bit geeky. British History Podcast.
Well, no, I'm in.
The Kermode and Mayo Film Review. I'm a big fan of the Kermode and Mayo Film Review. That's fun. I do like the High Performance Podcast. That's a good one. My podcast time is walking to the station, and it's like 40 minutes a day. So I do get through quite a few in Under the Skin. I quite like that as well. Russell Brand's Under the Skin. That's another good one.
Oh yeah, Russell Brand. He's a bit of a one, isn't he?
Yeah, he's good. He surprised me. I wasn't sure. Yes, I wasn't sure what they'd be like, but actually his podcast is pretty good.
Yeah, he's very erudite and clever, isn't he?
Right, Aaron, thanks for coming on, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure. You've you've blown me away anyway with your knowledge, and just so much there about your story as well, which I think is so kind of you to share that, mate. So thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you both for having me.
Thanks very much. I think what's needed more than anything after that is a Friday night beer, to be honest. That was pretty emotionally hard hitting.
It was. What did you go for, Charlie? What beer have you gone for?
I've gone BrewDog Lost Lager. It's probably my favourite lager at the moment.
Yeah, it's one of my faves. Mine's already open because I couldn't wait for the festive sort of opening. So mine's a Moretti.
I've gone with that lovely sound of a can on air. I think that hopefully that will come across quite nicely and refreshing because it tastes good.
Nice. Yeah, that was really, really great. I felt like I sort of learned a lot, but I also just felt like I was kind of in it with Darren. That was the main thing for me. I really felt like I was kind of coming along with him.
It was so kind of him to be so open about his experience, because it's clearly been pretty awful time and tough to live through, and tough to then work in it as well. You know, to experience it and then have to put that to one side and then think of others whilst you're experiencing it must be horrific.
Yeah, the bit I also found really interesting was the bit where he felt he'd recovered, and then actually his symptoms almost accelerated after that point where he had that, as he describes, crash. So I really wasn't aware of that. And you know, perhaps it's my ignorance with the literature in non-COVID, for instance, but not that there's a lot of it, but the discussion around it, I just wasn't aware that you could feel like you were getting to that point of recovery and doing really well, and then you could be brought right back down.
Absolutely. My feelings were the same. Completely wasn't aware of that latency at all. I thought that it was something that if you had it, you would feel it at its worst straight afterwards, and it would, if anything, get a bit better. I didn't realize that there'd be this latency of not feeling much or anything, and then this big crash. Certainly learning. And then also the vaccine as well. I didn't know anything about that. That was fascinating. I'm sure they're still trying to figure out what that's all about, the reduction in his symptoms, and there's anecdotally 20 to 30% of people are having a reduction in long COVID symptoms from the first vaccine. And then he's also mentioning that there was even this gradual wear off towards the second, and he felt like he needed that second to get another hit of that relief. And then that even gave him even more of a relief. So fascinating stuff. I'm sure there's more to come on that.
Just shows how much we are literally learning as we go. It's just completely evolving and developing during the pandemic, which must be quite frustrating and difficult if you're suffering, or one of those suffering from long COVID, and it's all just happening at the time. You know, the answers just aren't there for lots of it.
It's interesting as well. Something I didn't mention during, but it did come to me whilst we were chatting, was that for those sufferers of chronic fatigue and ME, how they've probably been trying to bang this drum for a long time, and there just hasn't been the resources to really do anything about it, and hasn't been the interest or the demand or the airspace for it. And actually so perhaps in some ways this has given it the awareness, this has brought it to everyone's attention, so now more people are going to help and do something about it. You know, Darren himself is clearly pushing frontiers and doing amazing things, and maybe that then has a knock-on effect on the wider aspect of recovery for people with these post-viral syndromes. It's really fascinating. I hope that in some ways there can be some positivity, a bit like the vaccine. You know, the way that the science community came together to create these vaccines in such short space of time, and they'd never been done like that before, although it's clearly a terrible, terrible situation for the world, that it's a time where scientific revolution and medical learning is accelerated as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of like you said, it's, you know, the demand is going to be so large because it's so global, that hopefully it will just continue to push things forwards in all realms of medicine that are in any way related to the symptoms or the recovery of this. So fingers crossed we still keep going forwards.
And something that, I mean, you know, I've just finished the book Range by David Epstein, and it does talk about the ability of people in these unknown circumstances to draw from different areas to then learn across lots of different spheres. So this is where specialists may not be best placed, but people know a little bit about lots of different things to go, oh, do you know what, that bit about concussion, that may well be relevant here. What about if we have a look at that? And what about that thing about chronic fatigue syndrome? Let's bring that research in. So the ability to draw on lots of different areas to try and revolutionize the treatments, the management for something like this, may well come up with something that would have never occurred in the absence of the awareness, in the absence of the fact that this has become front and center of so many people's lives.
Absolutely. So we're sort of approaching close to the end of our first season, right? We haven't got many more in our first season. That's quite exciting.
Yeah, we came at it thinking about topics that were proving to be a barrier to health, you know, long COVID clearly being one of those. Although we had all sorts of ideas, we sort of settled on a few that really seemed relevant to this season. Got lots coming up in season two, lots of ideas. We're thinking that would be much more focused on the topic of exercise. We've got some recorded already, others lined up, plenty more to come. Absolutely look ready to go with those. So we're hoping to drop straight in next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's some really exciting guests. I'm looking forward to sort of announcing some of those actually. It'd be good. I think there's a nice, even though it's exercise, there's actually a really nice breadth of the topic is wide, and we've tried to pick it wide, a bit like what we've done with Barriers for Health. So quite exciting,
yeah,
really.
We could have easily just gone down the strength training, running, but actually I think we've hopefully covered some topics that aren't necessarily in our comfort zone or within our bias, just to make sure keeps us honest as well, doesn't it?
Definitely. So if you're enjoying the podcast, guys, thank you for those that are listening already. We'd really appreciate it if you could like or leave us a review if you've got time to do that. It seems that Apple podcast app seems to be the best way to leave a review. I haven't seen anywhere else that you can do that other than directly on Podbean. So, I mean, if anyone actually knows how you do that on Spotify, please let me know, because I'm not sure you actually can. And then obviously, if you're enjoying it, subscribe. Thank you again.
And if you wanted to get in touch with us, if you've got any stories yourself, if you've had any experiences with long COVID, or if any of the other podcast episodes have resonated with you, then we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at the.healthspace@gmail.com, at thehealthspace.co@gmail.com. And thanks a lot for listening.
Please leave that in. You sound like Peter on the Peter Crouch podcast. There's a bit on that. I think it's the first season or the second season where he literally cannot get the email right. It's ridiculous. And they just goad him for ages. So you are now the Peter Crouch of our podcast.
No, I've really got to look at that email. I mean, it's, yeah, all right, I'll try and get that right for the next one. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed the show, subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. We'll keep bringing you the gold. Follow us on Instagram at the.healthspace, and for any questions or ideas for future content, email us at thehealthspace.co@gmail.com.